Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume. Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume. Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
Get ready for July 4th with early savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
Merkel Media.
I guess it's time to go back in time.
Are you telling me you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
Time is but a stubborn illusion.
I have a lot of memories of the past.
People are time traveling within themselves.
Time travel is possible.
This was all circulating around the base that a giant had been killed, but no one was supposed to talk about it.
I saw three long bony fingers reach up underneath the door, curl up to grab it, and then disappear.
When he came over to me, dude, he slithered over to me.
And this giant comes out of the cave and they're all frozen. And he starts running and firing at this giant. Well, the giant moves. He's got a spear in one hand, and he's running really fast. And spears Dan and holds him up like this. Somebody yells, shoot him in the face, shoot him in the face. They basically decapitate him.
Got closer. When he got about 15 yards away from me, I raised that 12 gauge, and I blow his head off.
I feel something pulling at my leg. And I look over, and there are two small gray entities pulling at me. And they're literally, I'm getting pulled off the bed.
I reach my hand into this bush, and I touch air. Couldn't breathe, and I couldn't move, because I know I'm seeing a monster.
Okay, I'll reload it.
Yep. Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to The Confessionals. I am your host, Tony Merkel. Thank you for being here. If you've had an encounter or a story you'd like to share with me on the show, go ahead and shoot me an email or go to the website, theconfessionalspodcast.com, hit the contact section, and you can reach me that way as well. And if you're interested in having extra shows every week, go to the website and join and become a member. All you got to do is hit the join button, sign up to become a member, and you get an extra episode every Thursday, plus forums, live shows, things like that. So if that interests you, go ahead and do that today at theconfessionalspodcast.com. Now, thank you everybody who texted my brother Jack last week, happy birthday, who tried calling him. It really was a great celebration because he said that he got over 900 text messages last week from people who I gave his cell phone number out to on the show. So thank you very much for following through and texting Jack and making his life a little bit more difficult compared to what it would have been if he would have just listened to my show. So thank you very much. Now this week we have John coming on, and John has had paranormal experiences, weird experiences, but he's also seen an alien entity in his backyard as a kid that was actually lit up by a green light. And then later on in life, he actually had his suspicions and his vision confirmed through somebody else who saw the same exact thing in that neighborhood. So let's get to John right now. Okay, today I have John on the show. John, how you doing, man?
Doing pretty good, Tony. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. We were trying to work out some technical difficulties here, but we finally got the show up and running. And I'm glad we did, because you have some interesting stuff to talk about today. You have alien encounters and some ghostly encounters, and even, you know, an interesting story from when you were a photo technician. So why don't you, like we said earlier, start out chronological order. So that would start off this alien encounter. So what happened there, man?
Let's just take it back to about 1975. It was probably in the late summer, early fall of 1975. And the reason I know that is because I remember the nights being, you know, pretty cool outside. And I'll tell you what, another, a little further down the story, I'll tell you why I knew it was that time of year. But basically, to give you a little idea of the geography of the area I lived in, and there's a little place called Springboro, Ohio. It's between Dayton and Cincinnati. And it's probably about, I'd say probably 30 minutes or less from Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And it was, we lived in a street down there. It was called Catalpa Drive, and it was a little three-bedroom brick ranch house. And one of the things that stood out to me that I remember from living there when I was a kid is that, you know, we lived, our road was on a hill, so each neighbor's house, you know, kind of stair-stepped down the road as you went down the hill. And our yard had a concrete retaining wall that kept our yard from collapsing into the neighbors. And on top of that concrete wall was a chain link fence. And it was like a regular, I think it was a 4 or 6 foot fence. I don't remember specifically, because the fence is no longer there anymore. But my bedroom was towards the back of the house. And when I laid my bed, I could actually see out my bedroom window that was faced the backyard. It was probably about a half acre of land or so. And I was laying in bed one night, and I heard the neighbor's dogs barking, and they knocked over the trash cans. They were making all kinds of commotion. And I got up from my bed and walked over towards the window to look out. And when I looked out the window, I saw this greenish color light coming from the sky. And it was real bright. On the ground in my backyard was this alien being walking in the light. And the light was following it. And I couldn't see no spacecraft or anything like that. All I could see was just this being walking in my backyard with this green light shining on it. And it was the color of, I don't remember, slime when you were a kid. that color green.
Yeah.
Remember specifically it being that color. And I can't tell you, I can't make out a lot of details because I didn't stay at the window very long. In my parents' bed, screaming and hollering that there was something walking around in the backyard. And, you know, of course, when you're a kid, your parents always tell you have the bad dreams and stuff like that, but it definitely wasn't no dream. I remember, you know, it was clear, you know, clear today as well. And my mom also recalls me having that incident when I was young. So I can't tell you any other details other than that, but during that time, that same period of time, I developed sleepwalking issue. And I would start sleepwalking, and I don't know if this is shortly before I saw the bathing being in my yard or after, but I actually woke up walking out my front door one morning, and that's how I knew I sleepwalked. And I don't do that anymore, but you know, during that period of time also, I developed a fear of humming noises, and up to about the age of 10. So if I heard on the TV that was humming or static coming, you know, back then we didn't have cable, so you know, you had to tune your rabbit ears or whatever. And if it goes static or something, it was, you know, I'd start hollering to turn it off. And that was a fear I had all the way up to about 10 years old. I don't know where that came from, but it all seemed to stem from that experience that I had. And lastly, while we were at that house, we lived there a couple of years, I had woke up one morning with a collapsed trachea, and I couldn't breathe, and my parents took me to the hospital, and I spent 5 days, about a week almost, in an oxygen tent. And they weren't sure what caused it. I hadn't had no injury. I woke up in the middle of the night for no apparent reason and couldn't breathe. As, you know, and they don't know what happened to my throat, but I'll fast forward to about 1989. Between 75 and 1989, I had lived out away from the Springboro area. And I'd moved back in my senior year. My father had lived there for a long time. I moved in with my father to finish out my last year of high school. And I'd met this girl there that we started dating, and you know, became my first wife, and we had 3 kids together. But in 1989, though, while I was still a senior, I was over at her house one day, and I was talking to her brother. She had an older brother. He was probably 5 years older than me, and he was stationed up in Alaska, military base up there. And he was telling me about some of his experiences he had with different lights and stuff like that in the sky. And I started telling about my story about in Springboro, about seeing that alien in my backyard. And I told him everything I just told you. And his hair was standing up on his arm. Got a little light, and I was like, man, what is wrong? If it's, you know, it's not that scary of a story. He said, I have my best friend. He said, lived over that way. And said he told me the same story. And So I actually ended up introducing me to his friend. Like, I never knew who his friend was. I didn't even know him. So one day I went to work with him. He worked with his best friend, and he introduced me. And so his friend had seen the same thing I had seen back in 1975. So this is 14 years later. So here I'm finding somebody else that's seen the same thing that that I saw, which is interesting. It gave me some validation. So I continued to date the same girl before we got married, and I started college, taking college courses, and I worked in a photo lab part-time, and that had been about 1990 to 92, I think, that I worked there, and we'd have contracts and stuff with some of the local government agencies and stuff. For instance, we process them. Not only could you walk in and drop off your roll of film and get your pictures an hour later, but we've done you know, custom prints as well. We've done black and white, and we've done enlargements. And my job is pretty much to run enlarging machine. I print anything out from 5x7s to 11x14s, 11x17. And I will get stuff in from, sometimes I get stuff in from a Dayton Corners laboratory. Unfortunately, we'd have to process pictures for court cases, murders, and deaths, and stuff like that. I don't know, it was kind of gruesome, but I got an order one time from a research laboratory, and I won't mention, say the name of it, but it was local to where I worked. And this machine that I worked, this large machine that I ran, had a like a probably about like a 7-inch monitor on it. So I'd take a negative, you know, put it in like an easel, slide it in this machine, and it'd bring up a positive image of what's in the negative, and then I could, you know, adjust for color saturation and crop it and stuff like that and print it out. And it was kind of fun, especially when I got in there. Pictures of local model photographers bringing negatives for me to run all the time. Yeah, and I always, you know, I always had this door. It was like actually the mistakes, you know. I was like, oh man, that's not good enough. And Amy's wife had a pretty cool gig. They would go around to local restaurants and even bars, and they would hire these women to model like nightwear, negligees, and all that stuff. So I always enjoyed those kind of pictures of doing that work. It was much better than doing like the corner stuff. And but anyways, I back to the research laboratory. I got in this envelope with some negatives in it, and the guy wanted like 5x7 enlargements. Now, I didn't even read the name on the envelope. And it was one strip of negatives. It was like 3 or 4 images, frames. And I popped in the first frame, and up came on the screen was a grid of coordinates of like the features of probably even being. And I just remember in school having to use grid paper, but you know how it had all the little squares. Well, this would basically, if you can imagine, an outline of an alien, and like in the corners of its eyes, it would have the coordinates on that grid, the nose, the hands. Everything was like the location of everything. And I didn't actually see like a body. you know, a physical body right there, but it was like the outline of everything, of a body. And because I had the experience I did in 75, all the way up through school and stuff, I was always fascinated with UFOs. I always wrote my term papers or whatever on Roswell, the Roswell incident or something like that. And I called the number and I asked for the guy that was on the paper, and it said the name of the medical research company on the envelope, and he got on the phone. I told him, I said, I thought, you know, I'm processing your images right now. And I said, I've always had a fascination with UFOs and stuff like that. And I said, I even had an experience when I was a kid. And I said, what exactly is this? He says, well, yeah, probably nobody's going to believe you. He said, but that's from an alien autopsy. And I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of weird. He said, that's what it is. But ain't nobody going to believe you, so I ain't worried about it. And so I finished printing them and put them in an envelope, and he came in and picked them up later. And so that was that experience. And then fast forward a few more years, I think it was probably about right around 93 to 94, I had gotten into, took this computer repair course, and I started kind of getting fascinated with computers. And that was back before you had really the internet. AOL just came out. I don't know if you remember going to the grocery store, but on every shelf there was a 3.5-inch floppy disk.
Yeah.
With a 30-day free trial for America Online.
Yep.
And that just started like right after I got into the computers. And you know, anybody that was really messing with computers back during that time, you got familiar with what was called bulletin boards. And a bulletin board, basically, you run a little, you know, program on your computer. It was like a file server, and you have a modem in your computer, and you hook your modem into your phone, incoming phone line, and then you could dial up other bulletin boards, and they could dial yours, and you could share files, get files from each other. And that was back when, you know, you had the 14-4 modem. You know, it wasn't the fastest thing in the world. There was a nonprofit organization, and they were based out of Wright Patterson Air Force Base, from what I remember. And they put out a flyer, a monthly flyer, and I guess I can probably say the name now that it's not editing it out, but it was called, I remember specifically, it was called DRAM. And I remember it because DRAM, you know, back in the day, it was, I guess, dynamic RAM. And in that magazine, they would write little articles about some of the current technology in the computer field and stuff. And it was something, you know, like 10 or 15 pages, and you pick it up in your local computer hardware supply store. You know, you didn't go to Best Buy back then to get a computer. You went to a basically a little computer outlet that would custom build a computer for you, and you put together, you pick out your video card and what hard drive you want, amount of RAM, everything, custom build them for you. And on the back of the magazine was a list of bulletin boards, and every new fire that came out, it seemed like there was always another one added. And so I would go through and find the local bulletin boards that I'd have to call long distance to connect my computer to. And if you're lucky, the guy had like multiple phone lines in his house. So you had a better chance of getting on one, because every time you went to try to dial up someone's bulletin board, you know, it was a busy signal.
Yeah.
And so I found this one, and I remember the name of it. It was called Refrigerator. And it was local number for me. So I dialed into it, and I was searching around. I put in UFO or something. I don't know what keyword I used to search it. But anyways, I came across a file that said Project Blue Book. And I didn't know what Project Blue Book was. You know, even I had some fascination with in my experiences over time. I never even heard of Project Blue Book. And there's a description on the file, and the guide said, I've uploaded this several times, but it keeps getting deleted off my computer. I was like, oh, it must be good. So I downloaded it, and I read through it. And I stopped reading after, I don't know, a few pages, and I guess it got kind of a little bit creepy. But, you know, recently I checked to see if Project Blue Book was legitimate, and I guess it was. And it was something that part of, I guess, the government had kind of shut down, I guess, around the late 60s, early 70s. But apparently, what was in this Project Blue Book I downloaded, stuff was still going on up until in the late 80s. Because when I started reading, it got into an alien autopsy. And I actually went into detail and said that the federal government had 8 of these aliens in captivity. I think up until around somewhere between 87 and 89. And out of those, 2 of them were supposedly still living at that time. The autopsy part went in to talk about how they have, I guess, a brain and 2 separate hemispheres. And that how that they their waste, the way they excrete their waste is through their skin. And then the best diet for them is a liquid diet, because the way their digestive system is. And right after that is when I stopped reading it, because it was a little too creepy. But that's about the gist of my eating experiences.
Yeah. You know, John, I find it interesting, because when I was a kid, I remember getting on the internet and I would search similar things like aliens and things like that. And I don't remember very much as far as where I was on the internet to see this stuff. But I mean, we're talking about, you know, the late 90s. And I remember coming across these images of these alien bodies. And it scared me so bad, because it looked so real. And I had never seen anything that looked that real on TV or in movies. Like, we're talking about, you know, 20 some years ago, where technology wasn't what it is now. And when you had a computer image of something on TV that was supposed to be quote unquote real, you could tell it was fake. And this didn't look fake at all. It was like these dead bodies laying on this like table. And it scared me so bad. It makes me wonder if, like, in the early 90s, kind of like in the 90s when the internet was really becoming popular, or not popular, but public. Mm-hmm. I mean, it makes me wonder if a lot of this stuff was leaked on the internet in the early days, and people could see this stuff, and they locked it down later on. I mean, is that how you feel about it?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. I mean, from what I told you, that's what I do for a living. I work in the IT field. And, you know, back then, like I said, you know, you dial up another guy's modem, search through his computer for files and download the files and you know, the government, anybody that had computer systems back in those days, and even up into late 90s, had analog modems so that you could, you know, download your patches from your vendors for your software, or, you know, share files and everything. So the security technology has come a long way. So people had a lot of holes in their system. They didn't know it back then. So there's a lot of that information was accessible. People didn't know that, you know, those files were being accessed from their systems like they can today. That's about all of my experience with extraterrestrial stuff. But
I wanted to ask you a little bit about that before we go any further. When you were a kid and you saw what you saw, do you think that there was any interaction that you might have had that you forgot about with this thing that you saw walking outside? Because the reason why I asked that is because it seems like you clearly had some kind of side effect maybe from this, where the humming noises scared you. I mean, that's kind of very out of left field, odd. And then on top of that, the sleepwalking, you're not sure if it was before or after, but you distinctly remember sleepwalking around that time. Do you think that there was an interaction that you had with these things that maybe you just don't remember?
Well, I mean, there could be that possibility. I don't remember. But I know that, you know, my family's, at least from my grandmother's side, is very sensitive to things. I was very sensitive as a kid. I still am today. I mean, there's some places I won't go if I don't get a good vibe from it. But you know, I certainly hope not. I don't know what they would have got out of me back then. You know, 5-year-old, it's not.
Yeah.
Or, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't recall anything. I don't recall any experiences, you know, seeing them up close or being transported somewhere or anything like that. The only thing, I recall is some sleepwalking and humming noises, definitely. I don't know what it was about humming noises, but I did not like them. And, I thought maybe one day I might, you know, go to one of those people that, you know, does that reverse therapy type thing where they take you back in time and maybe see if something happened.
With the whole photo lab thing that you were working in and you were a tech there, what makes you think that, why would they even risk it? I mean, if you're talking about some kind of underground operation here, why would they choose to use a public facility? You would think that they would have some kind of like their own facility that to do the things that you were doing.
You would think so, but you know, back then you didn't have a lot of 1-hour labs. I mean, they started getting popular shortly after ours, but you know, if you wanted something quick, you know, you come to us and we'd get it right back to you within an hour. And that's the only thing I can figure out. I don't know. I mean, my own photo lab at my house. My father was a photographer in the Army. I'm photography all my life. And, you know, you had to have a lot of equipment to develop your own pictures, and it was expensive. I don't know. I would suspect that they probably would have had probably not our type of enlarged machine, a commercial grade, but they would probably had their own photo lab, I would have thought, and process their own stuff. And you know, it could always been some guy, you know, just making something up. I don't know. But he went to a lot of trouble, you know, to just make something up for himself. So,
yeah. And, you know, that's the thing with that whole concept, is that if he was just making something up and trying to, you know, pull somebody's leg, I mean, I don't know. I don't understand that why somebody would do something like that. Like, if I was going to hoax something, I would hoax it in the sense that I wanted to go big on a big scale, not just something, you know, where, hey, the local photo tech guy is going to get a little chuckle out of this and ha ha ha. But like, I mean, because that's all it was. I mean, it's not like you went public with it. It's not like it went any further right. than you. And if it clearly in those days there was internet, I mean, you would think that somebody, if they're trying to hoax something, put it up on the internet, put it in one of these forums, these bulletin boards, and let people see it and get it traction going. I mean, that's how people did stuff back then. It wouldn't be, you know, to go to a local photo place and have them see this, what should be top secret layout.
Yeah, you know, and it's just, I don't know the people. You know, back then, it's like people had this impression that, like, we didn't see what we printed out. And to give you an example, I remember one time, we actually caught a child molester when I worked at that lab, because when we printed out pictures, we went through and checked all of them and to make sure that, you know, we didn't have them too dark or too light, or, you know, that the colors were correct on it. And I guess people were under the impression that we put them in some machine and just popped them out. We put them in a bag. We never looked at them. And that wasn't the case. And, I remember people asking that all the time. They didn't really realize that we looked at it. I mean, some of the pictures we used to get in from film, man, I'll tell you, you'd be surprised what people take pictures of us in, but
I bet life was good at sometimes. And yeah, sometimes you're like, I mean, no, I don't want to see this.
There were specific people that sent stuff in all the time. I was like, doesn't this person realize that we're looking at this stuff they're sending in? Yeah, but you know, it happened.
So you said you actually caught a child molester with that?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, he dropped off a roll of film. I won't go into details on it, but
sure.
He dropped off a roll of film, and we spotted it in our lab, and he was coming back for the one-hour processing, and they held him up and told him that, you know, we're having some issues, and the issues we were having, we were waiting for the police to show up, so we tried to hold him off, and then got him. And I pretty much caught red-handed.
Wow. You know, like, how, man. That guy must have been really dumb. Really, really dumb. When you're doing something so illegal and so messed up, and you go to the photo lab, and they're like, oh, we're having issues. Clearly, the issue is the things that you were trying to get printed.
Exactly.
Book it, dude. Like, how stupid can you be? Like,
well, that's what I'm saying is, you know, a lot of people did... They don't know, like, they, you know, now you go to Walmart and just stick your memory card in the machine and it brings up your image and print it out. You know, back then people didn't think we really looked at stuff. Like, they thought we put it in a machine and it automatically done it, and we put it in an envelope and we didn't see it. Except, you know, people had custom enlargements done. They obviously knew, but the general person, I mean, I can count it all the time. You know, people just didn't know we actually looked through the pictures, and I would look through, I put this glove on, I would look through every single picture to make sure that it was the best print that we could do for the customer. And, like I said, we even done stuff for the Coroner's Laboratory, and I hated that. And it was just, we'd have to go through every picture. I mean, one time we had, not to get off track here, but one time we had a process 700 black and white pictures for a murder. I think it was around Dayton, Ohio. And it was from the Dayton Coroner's Laboratory. So it was going to court in Dayton, Ohio. And like I said, it was 700 black and white pictures. And the guy that worked in the black and white lab there, after the first week, he took the next week off because just got to him, and I had to do it and finish up some of them, and you know, just see some weird stuff. But
yeah, I'm sure.
moving forward, I'll talk a little bit about my ghost experience.
Yeah, go ahead.
Shortly after I had that experience with the alien walking in my backyard, we moved to an area called Carlisle, Ohio. And we lived in a little farmhouse. And the farmhouse, our driveway was probably about, it had to be 800 to 1,000 feet off the main road. And I remember, because we were living there during the blizzard of, I believe it was 77 or 78, when we had that big blizzard. And there was, in that house, I always had a bad feeling in the basement. And just that house in general. And like I said, from a young age, I had kind of just very sensitive stuff. Obviously, the noises, the humming noises, but I guess you'd call it intuition. Pretty sensitive to that kind of stuff. I met my sister, my younger sister, one day. We're down in the basement. I had this old water canteen. It's a plastic canteen. And I used to wear it on my side because I always thought that was in the arm, you know. And I laid it in a shower stall in the basement. And, you know, it was kind of an unfinished basement. And I had a concrete shower down there. And then one room. And then, of course, we had the washer and dryer down there. And that was about it. You know, it was kind of one of those damp, unpainted, creepy basements. That did have a concrete floor and stuff, you know. But I put that canteen in the floor of that shower. I told my sister, I said, if that canteen moves, you run. And I don't know why I thought it was, but I had water. It was half full of water. I was letting it drain out, and it scooted across the shower floor. And, man, we hauled butt up the stairs, petrified. And I was like, I knew this place was haunted. And, you know, I'd be laying in bed at night, and I'd get a feeling like something was in the hallway or somewhere. And I was the kind of kid that, even though I was scared, I would kind of go face it type thing. And I would get out of my bed and go in the hallway, and, you know, my heart would be racing. I'd be feeling like there's something there. And I'd go look and see if it was there. I remember I done that one time. I saw a full-body apparition of a male in my parents' bedroom. And I could see through it. And I could see it walking by their bedroom door. And one other time I was laying in bed, and my bed lifted up off the floor. And I don't know how far it lifted off the floor, but my feet were on the ground pretty quick when I felt that. I hid in my bed, parents' bedroom, and told them what happened. So that's all. We didn't stay there too long. We moved a lot when I was a kid. We moved to a place close to Middletown, Ohio. And it was a split foyer house that my grandparents had owned. And they had lived in another house about two homes down, and this house came up, and I guess the people fell on hard times. My grandfather bought the house from them, and he sold the house they lived in, moved into this split foyer. And when you walked in the front door, if you look straight up, there was a living room to your left, a kitchen to the right, straight up in front of you upstairs was three bedrooms, and you could see them. There was a railing that went across. And my grandparents' bedroom was to the far right. And when I stayed with my grandparents a lot when I was a kid, too. I idolized my grandfather, so I wanted to spend as much time with him as I could. And so I'd stay there. I'd stay in the middle bedroom, but every night I would get up. I would leave that bedroom, go in her bedroom, because I just got a feeling that someone was watching, and felt like something wasn't right in that bedroom. And I'd either crawl up and lay between them or them, you know, the bed on the floor. And I felt like something was off in that house. And they eventually moved down to Texas, and from there I moved they moved to Texas, and at some point my uncle and their son rented the house for them while they were down in Texas. And he would come in sometimes from work. He'd get in real early from work about 2 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And he'd go take a nap sometimes, because he'd leave at like 2 o'clock in the morning, go to work. So he'd been on a full day. And he told me one time that he laid down in that middle bedroom and he woke up and something was holding him down on the bed. And he couldn't see what it was. He couldn't get out of the bed. And all he could do was start praying to God that whatever it was would leave. And eventually it did, but it was confirmation to me that something was always off in that bedroom. And I don't know. I just felt like there was some type of evil spirit or something. Of course, he thought that as well, especially after his experience. Let's see, fast forward to where I currently live. Live here close to Fredericksburg, Virginia now. I've lived in this area for about a little over 21 years. We have a little three-bedroom house here in my, like a private gated community. And nice little place with some woods and a lake. And this house that I live in was built in 1984. And I actually knew the previous owner. I used to come over here and help my grandfather. My grandparents actually moved here to Virginia. I kind of followed them. And my granddad, when he retired, used to mow her grass. So the place came up for sale, and I ended up making an offer on it. Moved into it. Well, I know she was the only person that lived here after it was built. And the first thing I noticed, let me give you a little background about this area. Right in the middle of the Civil War battlefield. And if you ever look up Battle of Wilderness, big battle was fought around here. Of course, everywhere in Northern Virginia, there's some type of historical Civil War place or monument or something. But this area where I live, the woods caught on fire during the Civil War battle. A lot of soldiers burned up alive during the war. So there is some, a lot of history here. I started coming up from work, and I noticed there was a picture of my daughter that I had, my little friend, and I was sitting on a little table by our door when we come in. I looked at other pictures, but every time I come in, that picture was face down. And I thought possibly, well, it was a bad frame. you know, picture frame. I masked it a little bit. I was like, it don't seem like it's wobbly. And, you know, I started noticing it more often. So I said to my wife, I said, why is that picture down? So I've noticed, you know, I come in from work, and out of all the pictures, hers is one face down. And so one night I was took the picture and I set it between me and the little table beside my recliner. And then on the other side of that table was another recliner. And I set it right there and faced it towards me. Now, I went to bed that night, and about an hour or so later, I got up, and first thing on my mind was, I'm going to go check that picture. And I came out here in the living room, looked at it, and it was turned the opposite way on the far side of the table. It had been moved. And the it kind of freaked me out a little bit. We haven't really had much of anything else. My wife, much of anything else besides that, other than my wife, one night got something tapped her on the back of the shoulder. And she said, hold on, see, I'll be looking just a minute, honey. And she was in the middle of the bedroom. She thought it was me. She turned around, nobody's there. And it kind of freaked her out. And my wife, we were on our way home one night, and it was late. We were coming back from somewhere, and she said, what are those guys doing on the side of the road? I'm like, what guys? I don't see anybody. And she said, it was back there. We just passed them. And when she described him, it was a description of what little Civil War soldiers were back then during the war. And I noticed on Facebook, like within a week after, which was weird, so several people around here was reporting seeing ghosts up by the battlefield crossing the road down here, which is Route 20. So there's some ghost activity. I know a person down the street from me that they had to sell their home because they actually had a full apparition in it of a Civil War ghost. And their family wouldn't come and stay with them. And it was my grandpa actually done some work for the lady. And she said that she told my grandpa, when he asked her why she's selling the place, he said that her daughter comes down here from Maryland to stay with her. And she has a Civil War ghost in her house. And when her daughter saw it, she would not come back. So she had to sell her house with further northern Virginia. But that's about the gist of my experiences. And I guess that's one reason I'm more open to what other people see, because, you know, my experiences, you know, being young, it makes, I guess I feel more open to other people's experience. And today I pretty much, I'm not into UFOs or paranormal stuff. I'm big time into Sasquatch. Not that I want to see one, but that's actually how I came across your show, was on Wes Germer's Sasquatch Chronicles. And we listen to that like every day. So we hear you every time you jump on there. And I didn't want to tell my story to feel like I need to get it off my chest, because it really don't bother me. I mean, you know, I never felt like I needed somebody to talk to about my experience, and I didn't care if people really believe my experience or not, but it did happen. You know, I was just more curious if people, anybody else other than the other person I met, seen the same thing I did, you know, Springboro, Ohio, 1975. back then, it was a township. I think that now, you know, as a matter of fact, in the late 80s, it was still a township. I think it might be a city now, you know, because it's grown so much. But But, you know, I'm just, you know, there's a lot of people that's reported seeing aliens, UFOs, Sasquatch, or whatever. And a lot, too many reportings for, you know, for people to not really be seeing something. I mean, if one person
right.
is telling the truth, then something is, exists. So I have an open mind and that kind of stuff. And, you know, I grew up in church. You know, and I, you know, people say, well, you know, I don't, it doesn't talk about Bigfoot and aliens and stuff in the Bible, but it doesn't say they don't exist, so that tells me they could exist, you know.
Sure. You know, I wanted to ask you a little bit, John, about that interaction you had with the guy who saw what you saw when it came to the alien encounter. What was that mm-hmm. like, you know, sitting down and talking to somebody who saw what you saw? And it wasn't the same exact day and time, right?
No, it wasn't. No, it was actually probably a year or two later, because I actually ended up marrying this girl I was dating, and her brother and him worked together. They were tool and die makers. And when I went to see him, we didn't talk much about the experience. It was like, hey, this is the guy I was telling you about. Oh, okay, I know who you're talking about now, you know, that type of deal. We just didn't really bring much up about the experience, but it was basically, I mean, it was the same thing I saw at the same time, you know, in the same area, which was good enough for me. It was like,
sure.
I remember that for all these years for some reason. Obviously, it happened.
Yeah, now, with that alien entity that you saw walking, I mean, how tall was this thing? Was it like a short little thing, or was it tall? Because I've heard reports of them being, you know, 7-8 feet tall and all the way down to 3 feet tall.
It was short. It was about the size I was, and I was 5 years old. So it couldn't have been much over 4 feet, if that. Probably, maybe not even okay. that. And it seemed to me it had some type of uniform on. That's what I recall, but I can't recall the details of it. Because I said, you know, here, I look out the window, I see this bright light, and I'm following it down to the ground. You know, it's like coming from the roof of my house type thing. And when I follow it down to the ground, it's like it's just being walking in my backyard. And the dogs are still going nuts. You know, you can get the chain. They're trying to get through the chain link fence. Trash cans being knocked all around for a kind of a loud enough to get me out of bed to walk over to the window and see what was going on in my backyard.
Yeah. Well, John, man, I really appreciate you sharing these stories and stuff, because it's not every day you get to talk to somebody who actually saw one of these entities and in the situation that you saw it, you know, like it wasn't like you were, you know, being abducted or anything right. like that. You looked out your window, you saw what you saw. And then the fact that you had somebody else corroborate your story years later saying they saw the same exact thing. I mean, that has to make you feel good. It has to make you feel like you're not going insane, or you made something up or dreamt yeah. something.
Yeah, I did. I mean, it was a good confirmation. And my mom will even confirm it, you know, because, you know, it's not long ago. I said, hey, you remember that time I saw that alien in our backyard? I said, yeah, I remember. Yeah, you know, she never forgot it either. I was pretty petrified when it happened. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess it was a little different because I actually saw an alien being versus seeing like a UFO or something. Which is one reason I want to share my story. It was a little bit different.
Yeah, for sure. And
not like I was abducted or anything.
No, but it definitely interesting. And, you know, down to the photo lab story and everything. Man, I just want to say thank you very much for sharing that with us. And I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing.
Well, yeah. Thank you. I hope somebody else says, yeah, I saw something like that around the same time. That'd be kind of cool. But thanks, Tony, for having me on, and I enjoy listening to your show.
Well, that's the show, everybody. I really hope you enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, please share the show with your friends. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, TikTok, email. I don't care how you share the show. Just share the show if you enjoyed it. And until next week, friends, stay safe, take care, and remember, the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off. Bye.
Don't speak, don't wanna hear all your warnings. Don't get what happened before me. Wait, don't leave. Nothing that's easy is worth it. Nothing that's worth it is perfect, yeah. I've been thinking to myself I want you all to myself, no one else. Take it all for ya. If you're gonna hurt someone, then let it be me. If you're gonna break my heart, I'm ready to bleed. Even if it kills me, oh, I'm begging you, please. If you're gonna hurt someone, then let it be me. Oh, let it be me.
Let it be me.
Oh, let it be me.
Let it be me.
Let it, oh, let it be me. Let it be me, oh let it be me. Let it be me. If we fall, then you can blame it all on me. Don't have to tell me you're sorry. It's your call, whether you leave or you take me. I'm still gonna want you like crazy, yeah. I've been thinking to myself, to myself. You're gonna break my heart, I'm ready to bleed. Even if it kills me, oh, I'm begging you, please. If you're gonna hurt someone, then let it be me. Oh, let it be me.
Let it be me.
Oh, let it be me.
Let it be me.
Let it, oh, let it be me. Let it be me. Oh, let it be me. Let it be me. Let it be. I've been thinking to myself, I want you and no one else. Oh, oh. Even if it gives me hell, baby, I would take it all for you.
If you're gonna hurt someone, then let it be me.
Ooh,
if you're gonna break my heart, I'm ready to bleed. Even if it kills me, oh, I'm begging you. You're gonna hurt someone, then let it be me.
Oh, let it be me.
Morgan Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume, Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
Get ready for July 4th with early savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait, and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Check out our huge in-stock selection of TruBolt door locks. We have a variety of styles and finishes to suit your needs. TruBolt door locks provide homeowners and builders with quality door locks at an affordable price. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume, Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.